Last time we only read the story of the life of Socrates. Now we go into the teaching of Socrates. What did he teach? What was the main burden of his discussions with the people in the marketplace with various sophists? Let me explain as an introduction two or three words which will be very important to understand Socrates. One is the word sophist. Let me write down the name, the word sophist. Sophists was a group of teachers who used to teach young people the art of argument, how to argue in a debate. Now, what was the importance of argument in a debate? The importance was that Athens, one of the great city-states of Greece, ancient Greece, was run by some kind of democracy. Now, what is democracy? Democracy has been defined as a rule of the people, for the people, and by the people. In other words, when the government, the ruling of the whole society is done by the people themselves, not by a king, nor by a chief, nor by a few individuals, then every important matter had to be decided by all the people. Now, whenever the people are called, then people make propositions, statements, they express their opinions. Now, wherever there is a situation where people argue by presenting their opinions, the normal tendency is that your argument should win. Whatever statement you make, you want that statement to be legitimate, to be declared to be legitimate. People should be convinced about your point of view. Whenever people's opinions are gathered together in an assembly and where people are allowed to speak, people begin to concentrate upon the art of speaking, how to speak, what form of speech. Just as if a war takes place, then the concentration will be on the use of arms. If it is by archery, then the archers become very powerful. Their archery will come into the picture and people will be trained in archery. But if an action depends upon winning a debate, then young people will be taught how to argue in a debate. How will you put forward your arguments? That is why in the time of Socrates, there arose a group of teachers who used to gather young people and teach them how to argue and how to win in a battle of arguments. Now, first is the language, because all arguments are spoken in a language. Therefore, importance of language is underlined. Secondly, what is called the art of involved argument. What is involved argument? It involves the process of ratiocination. I told you last time the word ratiocination, I should repeat it. I have given the example of it. A is a cause of B, B is a cause of C, C is a cause of D. Therefore, A is a cause of G. This is the process of ratiocination. You connect one idea with the other, second with the third with the fourth, fourth with the fifth with the sixth with the seventh. Now, A is a cause of G is an inward argument. So if you are taught how to make inward arguments, the other party will be put to a difficulty to understand the argument. Unless the whole chain is explained, you will not understand A causes G. Unless you are explained A causes B, B, C, C, D, D, etc. If you simply say in an argument, A is the cause of G, the other party will find it very difficult to understand it. Therefore, in the battle of arguments, the other party is baffled. It takes time for the other party to understand your argument. Therefore, you have an upper hand, because you are making an involved argument. The other party takes time to understand you, perplexed. The other party becomes perplexed, is not able to even answer your question. Therefore, you win the argument. Because the other party does not have the time to think out all the steps and meet the steps one by one. Now, this is one of the ways by which you can win the argument. If you can tell the students that if you want to win the argument, then make an inward argument. Don't argue in the way in which you teach in a school, where you can explain step by step. You work as if you are a master of the argument, and you have short statements in which you connect one cause with the effect which is very remote, and close them together. Therefore, the other party will not be able easily to argue against you. Therefore, you win the argument. Now, usually, arguments must be true. All arguments, ultimately, are meant for what? For finding out the truth. So, if you are servant of the truth, then you don't try to win over the other party simply by the power of your argument, or by perplexing the opponent, by putting him into disadvantage. You put your statements in such a friendly manner, in a complex manner, that the other party is not able to understand you fully and therefore cannot reply to you very well. So this method of arguing, in which the aim is to win the argument and not necessary to sell the truth, is what is called sophistry. It is called sophistry because this was the argument, the form of argument which was leveled by sophists. The group of teachers, they came to be called sophists because they taught sophistry. They taught the art of argument in such a manner, in such an involved manner. One of the witty arguments which is very often put as an example: when have you stopped beating your wife? When have you stopped beating your wife? He doesn't ask you, do you beat your wife at all, first of all. When have you stopped beating your wife? It's an involved argument. It assumes that you are beating your wife. It already assumes. It may not be true. It is assumed by the argumentator. He puts you at a disadvantage. If you say, I have stopped, that means really that you are beating your wife earlier. If you say no, then it means that you are continuing to beat your wife yet. So both ways you are caught. The answer will be either yes or no. It takes time for you to understand that you are already in the claws of your opponent. To say that I have never been doing that at all, it will take your time sometime to say this. Our first reaction to any question is yes or no, right or wrong. But before you can announce it, you are perplexed. Because you are in both ways. If you say yes, you are caught. If you say no, you are caught. This is called an involved argument. So if you are only trying to win a case by argument, you can do it without recourse to truth. So you can, in a debate, teach your students how to win in an assembly. That is why you will see that in any democracy, those who can shout loudly, those who can put down the opponent saying you don't know anything, these are the tricks. Shouting is one trick. They know as to when you should start an argument, in the beginning, in the middle, or at the end. That everybody first finishes arguments, then you stand up and meet certain points, or right from the beginning you start shouting, so an atmosphere is created of some great offense which has been committed somewhere. Or when the argument heats up, when the truth is going to be discovered, you begin to create a lot of storm. Three or four shouting people, they get together and create a lot of storm. The truth is covered. You can see how evil creeps into a very sacred thing called argument. Argument is actually a process by which truth is to be discovered, very simply. But you can misuse the form of argument. You can state the argument in such a way that instead of seeking the truth, the opponent is simply baffled and he cannot answer. This is how the sophists, a group of teachers, became very powerful, because democracy was the method of deciding things in which people were asked to argue. Therefore, this evil arose in the time of Socrates. Young people who were politicians particularly, or children of politicians,
who wanted a big career in politics, they were taught by the sophists the art of argument. Art of argument in order to win the argument, not necessary to find out the truth. And they used to charge huge fees for training young people. They did not care for the truth, they only cared for winning. Now Socrates was completely opposed to sophists. He wanted people to think of the truth, to discover the truth, to arrive at knowledge. I'll give you a number of examples where heresies are committed, but they are not easily detected. So this is the one aspect which you have to understand while understanding Socrates. Because Socrates used to go to sophists and also wanted, he used to point out to them their mistakes, sophists were very angry with him. Take for example the following illustration. Once Socrates went to a sophist and the argument turned on the subject of virtues. So Socrates said to the sophist, "Look, I am very ignorant." This is the style of his argument. Socrates always said that he was ignorant and he was seeking for knowledge. "I am very ignorant. Can you tell me what is virtue?" So the sophist said, "Well, it's a very simple question. What is the problem? Benevolence is a virtue, generosity is a virtue, kindness is a virtue, forgiveness is a virtue, gentility is virtue." So Socrates said, "My dear friend, you are only giving me a list of virtues. My question is, what is virtue? I am not asking the list of virtues. I am not asking what are virtues. My question is, what is virtue? I am not asking what are virtues. So please make a distinction in your mind between my question, which would be what are virtues, to which your answer may be quite all right, and the question which I am asking, what is virtue? What is it by which all these that you call virtues are really virtues? What is common between all of them, by means of which all of them are called virtues? If you ask question, tell me, what is man? Then you give the examples, Dorbyo is a man, so-and-so is a man, so-and-so is a man. It's a list of men. It's not the answer to the question, what is man? What is manhood? What is it by virtue of which all these are called men? This was one of the reasons why sophists wanted that Socrates should be silenced forever. Now this is one aspect which you have to understand with regard to Socrates. He was in search always of what is called definitions. He felt that you can define an object only when you knew. It is knowledge, right knowledge, which gives you the power to define. So in various discussions, Socrates always used to bring up the question of the definition. How do you define? Yesterday we saw that Plato wrote the whole book called The Republic only to define justice. It's a huge book, but the whole book is designed to define justice. You cannot define justice unless you know the whole world, totality of knowledge. And that is what it shows, that unless you know the totality, you cannot define justice. This is the second aspect of Socrates. The third aspect of Socrates was that he wanted people of Athens to be virtuous. There was so much of corruption at that time, in the time of Socrates. There was so much of lying also, and people were winning debates by telling lies, that he had taken up as a task for himself to make young people virtuous. All people virtuous. In fact, the whole city he wanted to be virtuous. And he felt that he had been given a mission by God himself to make young people particularly virtuous. So he used to roam about barefoot and stop anybody on the way and ask a question, define so and so. Now who would like it to be asked a question suddenly in the marketplace, some deep questions of philosophy? So accepting young people who had a lot of time, because they had, at that time many people had a lot of leisure, because some people had become very rich, so their children particularly had nothing to do, so they also used to roam about in the marketplaces, and they were stopped by Socrates. So some of them were very much impressed by Socrates. So that is how a good deal of young people were around him. But he would ask this question, define so and so, define that thing. He would ask a question, if you want to make a shoe, to whom do you go? This was a very famous question he used to ask. If you want to make shoes, to whom do you go? Obvious answer is, you go to shoemaker. And you say, why? The answer will be ultimately, that shoemaker knows how to make a shoes. He knows how to make shoes. And once you give this answer, his next question would be, if you want to govern the society, to whom do you go? If you want to govern the society, to whom do you go? If you want to make shoes, whom do you go to? To the shoemaker. Why? Because shoemaker knows how to make shoes. Now, in the same vein, now you argue, if you want to govern the society, to whom do you go? Answer, to the governor. And who is the governor? One who knows how to govern.